Chapter 23. Death March, January 1945. Sibby, Magda and Livy stumble, trip and catch themselves time and again as they plough the deep snow, arm in arm. They can no longer feel their fingers, their faces. The bombing draws closer. Surrounded by thousands of girls and women, all departing Auschwitz, the sisters head into the unknown. "Stay on your feet," hisses Sibby. Gunshots echo in the air as those who can no longer keep pace, those who have collapsed into the snow as though it were a bed, are dispatched with a bullet. "If one of us goes down, we all go. Remember that," she adds. They won't let go of each other, and they won't fall. They each decide. Livy turns round to survey the multitudes of women joining the throng. "Look, Sibby, it's the women from Birkenau," says Livy. Hundreds of women have been added to the queues, streaming away from Auschwitz. Sibby feels like lying down and dying right there on the ground, despite her advice to her sisters. They are mere specks in this vast landscape of women, marching towards yet another hellish unknown. "Is God watching us?" she wonders. Of course he isn't. Sibby eyes the guards who keep pace alongside the women, shouting, "Schnell!" and lashing out with the butts of their rifles, their icy fists. "Remember the promise," urges Magda, rousing Sibby from her despair. Her sister has not endured the beatings, the starvation, the degradation she and Livy have endured. Magda is still hopeful, so Sibby inhales a stream of icy air and releases a fog of breath. "We stay together no matter what," she responds. "We are strongest when we are together," adds Livy. The young girl's cheeks are hollow, but they are pink. Sibby is glad. She looks alive. They walk on. There are no breaks, no food or water, but when the officers move away to hammer at some poor girl who lacks the strength to carry on, they scoop up handfuls of snow to melt on their tongues. "Remember how we used to make chocolate snow?" Magda asks, after a long period of silence. For Sibby, the image of her mother stirring a steaming pan at the stove, amid the companionship of her family, feels like a scene from a story she read a long time ago. But she drags herself into the conversation for the sake of her sisters. "It would be too hot, and we'd go outside," begins Sibby. "And add snow to it." Livy is staring into the sky. Icy flakes land on her face. Her hand closes around the little knife, deep in her pocket. "Frozen chocolate, you used to call it," Magda says. "If only we had some cocoa and a bit of sugar, we could make some now." "The sugar won't dissolve without boiling water, though," notes Livy wisely. "We need more than hot water and sugar and chocolate." She turns her face away from the skies and stares at her boots. "We need Mama." Sibby draws Livy close. This is why she has to keep going. She can't let them give up now. "She's with us, Livy," Sibby says, "and Grandfather. They're walking with us right now. We just can't see them." "I can feel them," Magda whispers. "Mama is next to you, Livy, and Grandfather is beside Sibby." "Well, I can't feel them," Livy's voice breaks, "and I'm not a baby to be fed fairy tales." "Would it help if I told you a story?" Magda asks. "Not a fairy tale," she adds hastily. Livy is still staring at her boots. "Is it a happy story?" she asks quietly. "It is. It's about the last time Grandfather and I went into the forest for kindling." "Tell us the story, please, Magda," Sibby says, desperately, anything to keep their minds off this endless torture through the snow. "It was a glorious summer day," begins Magda. "Everything was alive in the forest. Even the ferns waved to us when we entered. Grandfather was pulling that funny old cart of his. You know the one? The heat. It's hard to imagine it now, but it was a blanket around my shoulders. Magda pauses, lost in her own memories. "Keep going," urges Livy. "Well, we were quite a way in. The bees and insects were going crazy when I came across a sunny clearing." Magda turns to her sisters, a question in her eyes. "You remember the big oak, don't you?" Sibby and Livy nod. The girls are still walking, taking care where to place their feet, wary of rocks beneath the snow which might upend them at any moment. Their toes are numb. Every part of them feels dead. But Magda's story of sunshine is beginning to thaw their hearts, at least. "I noticed a flash of colour, just by the trunk of the oak, so I ran over to it." "What was it?" Livy asks, fully engrossed. "And don't you dare say an elf or a fairy." "Don't be silly, Livy. This is a true story." Magda wants to get it all out now. She wants her sisters to feel the heat on their skin, to be dazzled by the blinding glare of the sunshine when she looked up into the canopy of leaves, to feel their ears twitch with the buzzing of insects. "It was the most magnificent sword lily I have ever seen. Just one. Those beautiful pink flowers didn't look real. Grandfather and I stared at it for ages, and then he asked me if I knew the meaning of the word gladiolus." "Do you?" Livy says, her forehead scrunching, as if she's trying to recall the meaning herself. "I do. Don't you?" "I do," Sibby says. "I don't," Livy says. "Magda, please keep going with the memory. What did you say?" Sibby marvels at their younger sister. They are surely headed for their deaths, yet she is lost in Magda's story, caught up in the summer's day, in the appearance of a magical flower. "The gladiolus symbolizes strength, Livy," Sibby tells her. "And do either of you know what family of plant the gladiolus belongs to?" Magda asks. She is stamping her feet as she walks, trying to get a little blood flowing into her toes.
"Don't tell me, don't tell me. I know this. Just give me a minute," says Livy.
Sibby and Magda give her a few moments.
"Iris! It belongs to the iris family," Livy blurts out with pride.
"Well done, Livy. And now a harder question. Do you know what the iris symbolizes?" asks Sibby. Livy thinks for a moment and slowly shakes her head.
"I don't think I ever knew that," she says quietly.
"Hope, little sister," says Magda. "It means hope. Seeing that sword lily before we were taken away gave me strength and hope. And that's why I'm telling you both this story now. We Mellor girls must stay strong and carry hope in our hearts." After a long silence, Livy says, "I can feel Mama and Grandfather with us now." The girls are still marching as night falls. The sound of bombing still stutters in the distance, but the noises are definitely moving away. Someone whispers that the Russians are winning, driving the Germans back, and that they are marching away from the Russian fighters. The sisters struggle to free their feet from the snow with each step. It is now past their knees, but they keep going because the only alternative is a bullet. They walk through the night and into the dawn, into the day. The snow has eased up, and the sun shines on the thousands of walkers. Sibby, Livy, and Magda step over the thin corpses of those who could not take one more step. They watch as other girls pause to remove the shoes of the dead.
"How can they do that?" gasps Magda.
"We've seen worse," says Sibby, "and if we needed extra clothing, I'd do the same." While the sun shines and the road ahead looms long and white, Sibby begins to wonder which of the sisters will collapse first. She hopes it's her. She is struggling to breathe now. It takes effort to fill her lungs and even to expel the air.
"Halt!"
The SS guards are suddenly animated, screaming at the girls to stop walking. The sisters freeze in place. They each have the same thought. They will die now, out here in the anonymous Polish landscape. Their bodies will be buried by the falling snow, only to be discovered, perfectly preserved, in the spring. But their guns are holstered. Instead, the officers direct the hundreds of women off the road towards a large barn into which they slowly file. Dozens at a time collapse onto the straw covering the ground.
"My feet are dead," groans Livy, reaching for her shoes. "Don't take them off," Sibby warns her. "Your feet will swell and then you'll never get them on again."
Sibby gathers handfuls of straw and packs them around her sister's feet. This will warm them up. She does the same for Magda and then for herself. The sisters hunker down, keeping on their coats, laying the blankets they've been wearing across them. Despite their hunger and the bitter cold, they fall fast asleep. The officers tell them it's time to go, and the sisters jump to their feet. Magda urges those around them to stand up, not to give up now. Some women never wake up, and their shoes and coats and cardigans are carefully and gratefully removed by those who need them. Those who refuse, begging the officers for a little longer in the shelter of the barn, are executed on the spot. They are on the road again. The sun is shining, but its warmth is an illusion. Within minutes, the girls are chilled to the bone. The snow is packed hard, and the women slide over the ground.
"A town!" gasps Livy.
Ahead, the outline of dark buildings against the blue sky. They make slow progress, but the fact that they have a destination drives the women forward.
"Oh, dear," says Sibby as they enter the town.
She points towards the train station at the top of the main street.
"This isn't good."
The train is a line of open-air coal wagons.
"At least we can stop walking for a bit," encourages Magda.
"Schnell! Schnell!"
the officers command, and the women climb into the filthy compartments. Black coal dust sticks to their damp clothes. It finds its way into their noses, eyes and mouths. The women cough and splutter as they stand, once again, packed tight, unable to move an inch. As the train pulls away, it starts to snow. The wagons rumble along the tracks. No one has said a word for hours. It's still very cold, but the fact that they are so close together provides a little insulation.
"Can you hear the fighting?" says Sibby.
And then the wagons jerk as the ground beyond explodes, scattering shrapnel over their heads. It can't be avoided. There's no room to duck. The women swerve, stumble, slip on the wet floor. One woman and then another and another pass out. They're dead already, thinks Sibby, and soon enough their features become rigid, their eyes glaze and mouths gape. Sibby turns away from these fresh corpses and catches a conversation between a few of the women. Should they throw the bodies over the side? They'd have more room if they did. But no one moves. In the early hours of the next morning, the coal wagons arrive at another camp. Sibby hears the name Ravensbrück uttered by the SS guards. As the sisters pass through the gates, Sibby notices a very young girl sitting on the icy ground, weeping. Sibby nudges her sisters and moves to kneel beside the girl, whose teeth are chattering. She is blue. She can't be more than 10 or 11 years old.
"Have you got separated from someone? Your mama?"
The girl shakes her head, and Sibby reaches for her hand.
"Would you like to come with us?"
The girl's watery eyes meet Sibby's. She nods. Sibby helps her to her feet.
"These are my sisters, Magda and Livy. Can you tell us your name?"
"Ava,"
comes a whisper.
"Ava, you can stay with us until we find someone you know," Sibby says.
"I don't know anyone anymore,"
Ava tells them in her quiet voice.
"They're all dead. It's just me."
Livy puts her arm around Ava, hugging her as they walk. There is no one to tell them where to go or what to do. Hundreds of women mill about the camp, seeking shelter. It's the most they can hope for right then. Their SS guards have abandoned them. Ava and the sisters are finally accepted into a block. The bunks are all full, and they will have to make do with the floor, but Sibby is simply grateful they are no longer outside. There is warm water flowing from the taps in the bathrooms, and Sibby soaks her scarf to wipe away the coal dust from their faces. "Strength and hope," Magda mutters as Sibby wipes. "I don't need strength and hope," says Livy. "I need food." The sisters have not eaten a morsel for 2 days, and it becomes clear there is not enough food in this camp to feed its inmates and the new arrivals.
"They are looking for volunteers to go to another camp," Ava tells them. "We might get some food there."
The four girls, rested and washed, head for the administration block, and, an hour later, they are on their way to Retzo, a subcamp of Ravensbrück, in the back of a truck.
"Stay strong, sisters," mumbles Sibby, but her thoughts are scattered. Why is she asking them to stay strong when she feels so weak, so utterly drained of energy and hope?
They will die in this truck, or at the next camp, or on another death march. Her father's face flashes in front of her eyes. "Now I'm hallucinating," she thinks.
"You are stronger together."
She hears his words as clearly as if he were sitting there beside her. Sibby's eyes shoot open. She was dreaming, but that doesn't matter. He was right, is right. She can't give in to her fear. Her sisters will sense it, and they will give up too. Once through the gates of Retzo, the women are lined up for registration. When it's Sibby's turn, she tells the officer she is from New York, in America. She winks at Livy and Magda. "It was just a joke," she tells them afterwards.
"How is that funny?" asks Magda.
The truth is that Sibby doesn't know why she did it, but maybe it's because there is no war going on in America right now, and that's exactly where she would like to be, as far away from Europe as she can imagine. The sisters have just learned they are in Germany. The sisters and Ava enter their new block with a rosy flush in their cheeks. They have just eaten, and now they have beds to sleep in. Magda claims a top bunk and is helping Ava up when the new capo steps into the room. All chatter stops immediately.
"I need girls to work at the airfield," she says, staring around the room.
The short, rotund woman with spiky black hair speaks slowly in German, so that everyone will understand her.
"It is a bomb site. Our enemies want to destroy us, but they will not win. If you help to clear the runway of debris and fill the craters, you will receive extra food."
Sibby exchanges a look with Magda. "Extra food because it's so dangerous," their eyes say. But they don't need to think twice. They decide to take Ava with them. While she's too small for this work, she is still better off in their company. The next day finds the sisters at the airfield, along with dozens of other volunteers, loading shrapnel and unexploded bombs into wheelbarrows and taking them away. The day after, they filled the clear craters with gravel. Slowly and methodically, the women clear small areas and enjoy the bread, milk, potatoes, and even pudding they are offered on their breaks. The sisters eat slowly, devouring every morsel, only returning to work when they have the energy and enthusiasm. One afternoon, Sibby is startled by the sound of an approaching aircraft. Air raid sirens scream across the airfield, and the sisters watch the SS guards flee to the bunkers.
"Run!" a voice yells. "To the kitchens!" shouts another voice,
and then Sibby, Livy, Magda and Ava, and all the other workers, are pounding the tarmac to the corrugated iron shack that functions as a kitchen. Outside, bombs are exploding as they crash into the airfield.
"Better to be killed by the Allies than the German pigs," the cook announces to the room, "and if we must die here, At least our stomachs will be full. Come on, eat, she commands.
The sisters stuff food into their mouths and their pockets. When the all clear sounds, the women return to the airstrip to find their careful work undone by fresh blasts. The work the next day is back-breaking, but somehow they fall into the rhythm of their labour.
This is easy work for us, jokes Sibby to Magda. We had to clear an entire demolition site when we first got to Auschwitz.
The bricks had to be placed just so, says Livy, delicately placing a piece of shrapnel into the wheelbarrow.
If it chipped or cracked, you would be cracked.
It is easy, but it is also thankless work. For every crater they fill, another bomb decimates it until, one day, Sibby announces to Magda and Livy they won't be going back to the airfield. There is no point. It's too dangerous, and no one seems to be monitoring them anyway at Retzau. Sibby waits for their capo's admonition, but none comes, and the sisters confine themselves to the camp, accompanied always by little Eva. Spring arrives, and a strange malaise settles over the camp. The guards are distracted. The inmates are fed and counted at roll call, but few do any work. They are all waiting for something to happen.
Sibby Mella, show yourself.
A female guard is standing in the doorway of the block, reading her name from a sheet of paper. It is raining, and the sisters are lying in their bunk, listening to Eva tell the story of her mother, a kind woman who loved the little girl, but who was taken away one morning, along with a dozen other women, never to return. Sibby squeezes the girl's hand and climbs down off the bunk, Magda and Livy on her heels.
I'm Sibby Meller, she announces.
Come with me. It's your lucky day.
Why?
Asks Sibby, following the guard into the camp.
You're being sent to Sweden.
She eyes Magda and Livy.
Not all of you. Just Sibby Meller, she snaps.
We go where our sister goes, Magda insists.
Sister? But your names aren't on the list.
What list?
The Red Cross is taking all American prisoners to Sweden and then back to the United States, the guard informs them.
Magda and Livy exchange a look and burst into laughter. But Sibby isn't laughing. Her joke has backfired, and now the Germans will separate them.
I'm sorry, says Sibby in a small voice. It was a stupid joke. I'm from Slovakia, not New York.
Do you think I care about your jokes? Your name's on the list, and you're coming with me.
Before she follows her, Sibby turns to her sisters. Go back to the block. I'll sort this out.
Don't worry, please, don't worry.
Magda and Livy stare after her, their laughter a bitter ring in their ears. And, sure enough, Sibby returns eventually and climbs into the bunk where her sisters wait for her.
I had to work hard to persuade the clerk, she explains. He took pity on me in the end, I guess.
But, Magda observes, Sibby doesn't look relieved. Her brow is furrowed, as if she's trying to work out a problem.
What else? She asks.
Sibby takes her sister's hands.
He told me they're emptying the camp, Sibby says slowly. We might be taken on another march.
A few days later, the inmates of Retzau are lined up and led out of the camp. Once again, the SS monitor the walkers, but this time, fallen inmates are not struck or shot. They are just ignored. The road they are walking on has been bombed, and the girls have to step carefully to avoid twisting an ankle in a crater. They pass bombed-out German vehicles, the limbs of dead soldiers scattered over the ground. The forests and fields of the German countryside are lush with plants and flowers, as the heat of the midday sun pounds down, just as the snow had done months earlier. They walk slowly, Sibby and Livy each holding one of Eva's hands.
"Have you noticed the guards are disappearing?" says Magda. "I just saw one wander off into that bit of woodland. He didn't even look back."
Sibby and Livy glance around. Sibby steps out of the line and looks back at the hundreds of women behind them. She lets out a long, slow breath.
You're right. Where have they all gone?
They're abandoning us, another prisoner says, and then another echoes the same line. Soon, Sibby and her sisters are surrounded by a group of women.
It's time to leave, one says. We can take our chances, adds another. I'd rather be shot in the back than spend another day, another hour, imprisoned by the Nazis, says a third. Let's do it, says Sibby. Let's move to the side of the road.
Her heart is in her mouth as she meets her sister's eyes, but Magda and Livy nod. They too are hopeful, feeling a sudden strength in their limbs. They can't face another march, another camp, another cruel order from a heartless man.
Magda wonders for a moment whether they should leave Ava, but one look at her, clutching Livy's hand, convinces Magda the little girl must stay with them for now.
A group of 10 women begins to walk away from the line, into the field by the side of the road, but they don't make it very far before they hear footsteps running up behind them.
Halt! Halt, or I'll shoot! Comes the bark of an SS officer.
Sibby turns round slowly to face the young soldier. He stops running and raises his rifle. Sibby places herself in his line of fire, shielding the women behind her.
You are so young, she says.
If she is to lose her life now, she doesn't want to do it on her knees, begging. She wants to look her killer in the eye.
You could just turn and walk away.
Sibby takes another step.
If you take one more step, I will shoot, he says.
Sibby takes another step.
No, you won't, she whispers. Shoot me, and the rest of us will swarm all over you like angry bees. How many of us can you shoot before we tear your eyes out? I'm showing you some mercy, so run away.
Her heart is hammering. Maybe he can even hear it. No one is more surprised than Sibby when the soldier turns his back on the women and flees. When she turns round, some of the women have covered their eyes, and Livy's face is buried in Magda's shoulder, Ava pressed against her belly.
Well, that was easy, says Sibby, letting out a breath.
Her sisters run into her arms, both of them crying.
Hey, hey, she says, holding them away. Come on, it's okay. Let's keep moving. It's time to go home.
Chapter 24. Germany, May 1945. In the late afternoon sun, the women watch the long column of prisoners shuffle away. No one else joins them, and they turn towards the field where the tall grass shifts in the afternoon breeze. It is a perfect summer's day, thinks Sibby, despite the distant sound of bombing. The women exchange names and camps. Two are from Auschwitz. Eliana and Aria are Slovakians like them. Of the four Polish girls, three are from Ravensbrück and one from Retzau. Marta and Amelia are cousins who found each other on the march. They are all in their teens. At the far edges of this vast landscape of green, Sibby spies a spire in the distance. A village, perhaps. But villages mean people, Sibby thinks. German people.
They'll hand us over, Livy says. The moment they see us, they'll fetch the SS. But we need to eat. If I don't get something soon, I may as well go back and join the march and wait for a bullet to the head, Eliana from Slovakia says. Let's take a vote, says Sibby. She knows they can't go on for much longer, but she can't make this decision for them. Her confrontation with the guard has shaken her, despite her bravado. Hands up if you want to head to the village for food. 8 hands shoot up. It's decided. Cutting across the fields, the group joins a road which will take them directly to the village. They quicken their pace,
and then they slow down. Sauntering towards them are two SS officers, rifles slung casually over their shoulders. Sibby tenses. Will her wits save her life again, or will she get everyone killed this time? She hastens to the front of the group and leads the way, her head held high. As the men draw closer, she averts her eyes. The whole group is staring at the ground, but they keep on moving, keep walking. And then the men draw level, and they too keep going, sparing them barely a glance as they stroll on. No one says a word. The village appears to be deserted. The streets are empty and every shop is shut and house boarded up. They make their way down a long street towards a large building with its doors hanging open. "Maybe it's a warehouse," observes Aria, the other Slovakian. To each other they speak in German, each of them knowing just enough to be understood by the others. Entering the cavernous space on tiptoe, the girls are fearful, peering left and right, under tables and up to the rafters, but there's no one in there either. And then they are spreading out, entering rooms off the main hall, finding cleaning equipment, bags of cement, anonymous machinery. "Food!" yells Magda. She has found the kitchen and is flinging open cupboards, pulling out drawers. She finds hard lumps of bread, some wizened scraps of cheese, soggy tomatoes and tins of sardines. Livy uses her knife to open the tins and they eat without speaking. Within minutes, the girls have devoured the lot. "I'm going to see if I can find out what's going on," Sibby says. "We need help if we're to get home. Everyone stay here until I come back." Sibby has washed her face and hands, dusted off her clothes, but she knows there's no disguising her identity. She is a Jewish prisoner, an escaped Jewish prisoner. She looks like a skeleton, and she is going to have to be very careful. "I'm coming with you," says Magda, taking her arm. They insist that Livy stay behind with Ava and the other women, and for once Livy doesn't argue. The sisters wander across the street towards a cobbled courtyard bordered by a row of small houses. They peer inside the windows, but again, there's no one around. A large cowshed stands next to the house at the end of the row, and Sibby beckons Magda forward. Piles of hay litter the milking stalls, but there are no cows and no milk. As they turn to head back to the warehouse, they hear a low moan coming from the stall at the far end of the shed. "Let's go, Sibby." Magda is scared of losing their tentative freedom, and Sibby has risked too much for her already. But Sibby isn't moving. "I'm going to take a look. Go and stand by the door and get ready to run." Sibby tiptoes over to the stall. From beneath a mound of hay, a bare foot protrudes. She brushes aside the straw to reveal a leg, then a torso, a man. He is dressed in the rags of a Jewish prisoner. Sibby gets down on her knees and examines his body for an injury, but finds none. His eyes flutter open. "What's your name?" she asks softly. He starts to speak, but his words make no sense to Sibby. "Magda, go and fetch the others," she calls over her shoulder. Soon the whole group is standing around the sick man. Eliana pushes through with a wooden mug of cold water, which she holds to his dry lips. After a few sips, he closes his eyes and falls asleep. For the rest of the night, the girls take turns to sit by his bed in the straw and talk to him, reassure him that the worst of their nightmare is over, that help is coming and he, just like them, will return home to his family. One by one the girls fall asleep, and when the dawn breaks, flooding the cowshed with light, they wake to find he is dead. "We have to bury him," says Magda. "We are not in the camps anymore. He deserves this final dignity." Livy and Ava find shovels, and in the courtyard, with the four Polish girls, they begin to dig deep into the grassy patch beside the cobbled clearing. Magda and Sibby search the one house whose door isn't locked for food, but there is none there, either. "What are those for?" Sibby asks. Magda is holding a bottle, a pen and a piece of paper. "You'll see," she says, and the girls head back to the courtyard. As they're shutting the door behind them, the front door of the house next door creaks open. Magda and Sibby flinch, step away, but it's just an old woman.
"What are you doing? Who are you?" she asks.
Sibby clears her throat. "Isn't it obvious? We've escaped from the camps and we're going home. But we need to bury someone first." The old woman looks into the courtyard, where six girls are busy digging a hole in the dirt. She sighs and shakes her head.
"There's a graveyard just down the road. You should bury him in there."
"You're right," says Magda. "Of course, we should have looked for the cemetery."
"I would wait until after dark if I were you. Someone might see you. You still have enemies in this village. Stay in the cowshed for now, and I will bring you what little food I have."
When the woman has shuffled back inside, Sibby explains the new plan to the group. The old woman, true to her word, returns at dusk with hunks of black bread and potato soup in a small tureen. Barely a full meal for one person. The 10 girls sip from the pan and pass it on, sip and pass, until it's all gone. And then they wait for nightfall, huddled together in the dark, in the straw, their slow breathing the only sound in this strange, deserted village, which may or may not house their enemies. Later, they take their shovels to the graveyard and dig another grave. 4 girls drag the dead man to his final resting place and lower him into the hole. Magda scribbles the number on his shirt onto the piece of paper, slips it into the bottle, and corks it. She throws it into the hole, and then all 10 girls heap soil over the body. The moon is full, lighting up their solemn faces. Sibby, Livy, and Magda stand together, their arms around one another.
"Someone should say the Kaddish," says Aria.
The girls bow their heads, and Magda begins to recite the words she knows from the funeral services in their synagogue. This is the first time she has spoken them aloud. They are not meant for the lips of women, but Magda had memorized them all the same. Soon, all the girls are reciting the ancient Aramaic prayer.
"If they find his number," says Magda before they turn to leave, "they will be able to trace his family."
"We'll sleep here one more night," announces Sibby, back in the cowshed. "We leave at first light." For 2 days, the sisters, Ava and the 6 women, wander the German countryside. They find berries to eat, the roots of weeds. They gorge themselves on windfalls and drink cold water from bubbling streams. But they are tired of walking, tired of this aimless meandering, despite their freedom.
"I can't take another step," Livy wails,
stopping in her tracks.
"Come on, Livy. One step in front of another. You can do it. You must do it," Magda encourages. "I need to rest. Please, Sibby, can we just rest for a while?" Livy begs.
The Polish cousins look like ghosts. Everyone has stopped walking. Sibby sees a small lake at the edge of the field they are crossing, bordered by tall trees.
"Let's go and sit by the water for a while," she suggests.
They walk slowly through the grass and drop to the ground, finding patches of shade in which to lie down and fall asleep. When Livy wakes up, it is to the sight of hundreds of butterflies tripping through the air. One dares to perch on her nose. She goes cross-eyed, trying to focus on its delicate beauty.
"Look at Livy," she hears Aria say. "Don't move."
The girls watch the butterflies land on Livy's face, in her hair, on her arms.
"It's the most beautiful thing I have ever seen," says Magda, choking back her sobs.
And then it is time to go. They leave the butterflies to their fun and head for the road. the hours on the road, the nights sleeping in fields or stables, wherever they can find shelter, give Sibby and Livy too much time to think, and they hate it. Neither sister can banish the memories of life at Auschwitz and Birkenau, and they realize now that these episodes of brutality will be lodged in their minds forever. At night, Livy wakes up screaming, Sibby breathless and sweating. Magda tortures herself with the question, would Mama still be alive if we had stayed together? Maybe they should have all hidden in the forest, day after day, out of the clutches of the Hlinka. She says none of this to her sisters. She feels an overwhelming guilt for what they had to endure in her absence. Ava is a comfort to them all, listening avidly to the tales of their childhood, when so much of this little girl's was spent in the camps.
"I can't find any happy memories," Livy cries one morning, sleep-deprived and rattled. "Then let me help you," Magda tells her. "Do you remember the doll Father gave us?" Livy nods. "Sibby?" "I do. It was the most beautiful thing we ever owned," Sibby replied. The women are walking once more across another field. The sun is high in the sky. There is no sign of life but their own. "And do you remember how, after he died, whenever we held the doll, Mama would tell us stories about him?"
"I don't remember him at all," Livy says. "That's okay, kitten. That's what older sisters are for," Sibby says. "Kitten," muses Livy. "I haven't heard that in a while."
Sibby realizes she hasn't called Livy kitten in a long time, and wonders if this is a good sign, a sign that they are becoming the girls they were before. "Well, you're a kitten to me, a tiny thing I need to look after. You were such a small baby, too. I think that's where it comes from."
"I remember her crying a lot when she was a baby," Magda adds.
"I did not."
But Livy is smiling.
"Tell us some more memories, Magda. Ones when we were all together."
The girls walk and talk, and very gradually, Sibby and Livy feel their minds latch onto happier times and hold on.
"Look! Cows! Lots of cows!" Livy yells.
It is late afternoon. The sky is awash with pink streaks. The colour has returned to the women's cheeks. The girls gaze at the black and white shapes in the distance, at the edge of some woodland.
"There might be a farmhouse nearby," Aria says.
"Or we could just kill a cow and cook it over a fire," Eliana adds.
Everyone starts to laugh, tickled by the image of 10 frail women chasing a cow around a field, with nothing to kill it with but their hands. The group draws closer to the woods, to the wide path leading through the trees. They leave the open skies and head into the cool shade of oak, spruce, and pine. The path veers off to the right, and the girls keep moving until they reach a paved courtyard on the outskirts of the forest and set eyes on the large house which looms in its midst. A path skirts around the courtyard, joining a road beyond the woodland.
"It's a castle! It's the biggest house I've ever seen!"
Livy hammers at the heavy wooden doors, but no one answers.
"I don't think there's anyone home. Some of you go round the back and see what you can find."
Magda, Livy, Marta and Amelia run towards the back of the house. They return a minute later.
"The house is open round the back," Magda tells them. "There's another dead man in the yard."
The group now gathers around this new dead body.
"He must have lived here. Look at his clothes. They're so fancy," Livy says. "Can we look for some food first?" Ava cries plaintively. "I'm starving."
"No," says Sibby firmly. "We're not animals to fill our stomachs beside dead bodies. We have to bury him now."
The girls hunt the outbuildings for shovels, spades, anything that will help them dig the hole as fast as possible. Sibby points to the immaculately manicured lawn beyond, in which a small fig tree blooms with new fruit.
That's the perfect place for him, she says. The girls take turns to dig.
Magda finds a wheelbarrow, and together with Livy and two others, they load the body into it. But Livy won't pull the barrow. The memory of moving Marla to the crematorium still painfully fresh in her mind. Magda once again opens her mouth to recite the Kaddish.
But what if he's not Jewish? Marta says.
I don't think it matters any more what your religion is. Not when you're dead, she replies. These are words of comfort, whether you believe in a god or not. With heads bowed, the Kaddish is spoken over the grave of an unknown man, by everyone but Sibby. The group gathers at the back door of the house, Sibby holding them there for a moment while she gathers her resolve.
There could be 100 people hiding in there.
Marta cannot shake off her fear, and she and Amelia huddle together, visibly shaking.
200, says Amelia.
She found her cousin on the march, and she isn't about to lose her now.
We need food, says Livy. We'll go inside and look around, Sibby decides. But I'm pretty sure if there were 200 people in there, they would have heard us by now.
She can feel its isolation, its neglect. She leads the way into a kitchen the size of her house in Vranov. She was right. People have left in a hurry. There are still dishes in the sink, bread only recently gone stale on the long table in the centre of the room. The girls perform their routine of opening cupboards, rifling through drawers. Magda finds a small cache of preserved fruit and vegetables, a few cans of fish and processed meat. And then Marta and Amelia find the prize, a walk-in pantry with jars upon jars of food on the shelves. They cry in relief. The girls gather at the kitchen door, which will lead them into the rest of the house. We stay together, says Sibby. They walk, open-mouthed, through the luxurious rooms, living rooms and libraries, studies and boot rooms. Livy opens one door to find a lift, but no one is prepared to try it. Instead, they ascend the staircase by foot.
There are just too many bedrooms, thinks Sibby. How many people live in this house?
The beds are draped with opulent silks, while thick wool rugs cover the polished parquet boards. Gold taps adorn the elegant bathrooms, and the girls leave muddy boot prints all over the pale marble floors. They enter walk-in wardrobes, the walls lined with shelves housing soft jumpers, shirts. Shimmering dresses dangle from tasseled hangers. In the chest of drawers they find underwear, which the girls model against their own bodies, giggling, before carefully replacing them. And then they find the mirror. Standing in front of the ornate frame above the fireplace in the master bedroom, the 10 girls pause to absorb what has become of them. Livy and Sibby barely recognize themselves. The Polish cousins begin to weep, and Ava buries her face in Magda's arms.
Let's get out of here,
whispers Sibby, and in silence the girls go back downstairs. They make for the dining room, pausing to run their hands along the surface of the long table, around which are arranged 20 elaborately upholstered chairs. The sideboards reveal an impossible array of glassware, whose drawers contain fine silver cutlery. At the far end of the room, the French windows open out onto a small courtyard, with a beautiful lawn extending into the formal gardens.
I haven't sat in a room at a table for so long,
Eliana says quietly. 9 heads nod up and down. No one makes a move to pull out a chair.
I don't want to sit in here, says Sibby. It feels all wrong. But I don't think the owners of this wonderful home would mind if we borrowed their table and chairs.
Where are the owners? Asks Magda.
Gone, replies Sibby. However gorgeous this house is, there's a lot of dust.
Now the girls peer at the sideboards, the surface of the table, the parquet floors. Sibby is right. Whoever lived here has been away for a while.
Sibby moves to the French windows.
Let's take it all outside. The girls pull away the chairs and position themselves at either end of the table and heave it through the doors and onto the grass. They return for the chairs and then for the food. Livy and the two Slovakian girls disappear into the vegetable garden beyond the lawn and return with carrots, lettuces. Livy wipes the blade of her little knife before she pockets it. Just as they are laying their produce on the table, a figure rounds the corner of the house and stands before them on the lawn. He is dressed in rough cotton trousers, a thick shirt. "Who are you?" he barks. At once the group gathers around Sibby, instantly on their guard. Livy closes her hand around her knife. He isn't so big, and there are 10 of them. Sibby once more finds herself stepping forward, clearing her throat. "We were prisoners of Auschwitz," she tells him firmly, "and now we've escaped." The man doesn't speak for a long time. He looks at the girls, who are suddenly self-conscious in the rags hanging from their emaciated bodies. His voice breaks as he utters the words, "Help me round up my cows, and it would be my honour to give you some warm milk and fresh cheese." "Do you know where the owners are?" Sibby points to the grand house. "I have no idea," he says. 5 of the girls go off with the farmer, and the others all return to the vegetable patch. Within an hour, they are laying the table with milk, cheese and bread from the farmer, tomatoes and fresh vegetables from the garden, and pickles and tins of fish from the pantry. Eliana has discovered the wine cellar, and she has uncorked 2 bottles of fine red wine, which are waiting to be poured into crystal glasses. Candles adorn the length of the table, and the silver cutlery gleams in their flickering light. As the sun sets, the girls take their seats. "We've survived the camps," says Sibby. "We survived the marches. We are not home yet, but today, tonight, I think it's time to celebrate our freedom. Our freedom march!" She raises her glass. "Our freedom march!" the girls echo. They clink glasses and, smiling, begin to reach for the food. They eat slowly, savouring every mouthful. The moon is full, throwing a spotlight on her sisters, and Sibby is finally confident that whatever lies ahead for them, they will face it together. Chapter 25. Germany, May 1945. The whole group is unanimous in their desire to rest and gather their strength before they decide what to do next. That first night, the sisters agree they cannot sleep in any of the bedrooms, and, to their surprise, the other women feel the same. They gather blankets, pillows and throws, and hunker down in the living room. Magda, with Livy's help, draws up a roster of work for the girls. Some of them will help the farmer with his cows, others are allocated chores around the house. For 2 weeks the group works, eats well and slowly, and each of the women finds her strength returning. Their hair grows thick and glossy, and pale cheeks fill with colour. The sisters' dreams are as disturbing as ever, and at least 3 of the women wake up screaming every night. But that's what this moment of respite is for, some time to heal more than their bodies. Sibby steps out of the house, preparing to head over to the farm. It is her turn to help the farmer round up his cows. All the air in her lungs escapes in one long gasp when she sees the open bed trucks parked in the courtyard. Soldiers. She takes a step back, one hand on the door, the other at her throat. The fear is sudden and painful. She feels faint and stumbles into Magda, who is standing behind her. "It's okay, Sibby," whispers Magda. "They're Russians. Look at their uniforms." The men are indeed wearing Russian uniform. Sibby scrambles to recall her Rusyn dialect. The officer in charge identifies himself and asks, "Are you the owner of this house?" Sibby wants to laugh, but she just waves at her rags at the equally ragged figures who now crowd around her. "No, sir, we are escaped prisoners from Auschwitz." She pulls up her sleeve and holds out her arm to show him the tattooed numbers. The officer shakes his head slowly and speaks in a low voice to the other officers in his truck. "How did you escape?" he asks. "The march. We ran away from the march."
"Do you know why you were marching? Where you were going?"
Sibby didn't know. So much made little or no sense. The violence, the torture, the killing machines. She had learned never to question orders. She shakes her head.
"They were going to use you to bargain for their freedom,"
he tells her, adding,
"and other reasons too, to carry on working for them, but also to stop you telling your stories to the Allies. Thank God you escaped."
The girls shuffle awkwardly from foot to foot. None of them wants to imagine more camps, more work, more brutality. Sibby tilts up her chin and stands straighter. "It's behind us now," she says. "We want to look forward." The Russian officer smiles and nods.
"I agree. Will you show me around the house?" he asks.
Sibby nods and steps aside to let him into the room, where the girl's crumpled bedding covers the floor. After a tour of the house, the officer returns to the living room.
"You are all Jews?"
he asks. The girls fidget and grumble, reluctant to answer. How has being Jewish ever helped them? "We're all Jewish," Sibby says firmly, with a defiant nod of her chin.
"I promise you will come to no harm," the officer says, "not from me or my men. You have my word. I am also a Jew."
Sibby informs the officer of their routine, the cleaning and collecting of vegetables, and the rounding up of cows in exchange for milk, bread and cheese.
"I need to talk to this farmer," he tells Sibby. "We Russians need meat."
Sibby witnesses the transformation of one of the outbuildings into a slaughterhouse for pigs and introduces a new chore into their roster. They will now help to prepare food for the soldiers. "I know it's pork," Sibby tells the group, "but we don't have to eat it."
"I'd eat it," says Livy, giggling, "if there was nothing else. But it does stink."
All this work has taken a toll on their clothes, and now the pungent aroma of pork fat is embedded in their tatters. "Help me sew these into dresses." Sibby corners Magda on her way to the farm. She is holding up old curtains she found in a cupboard and has uncovered an ancient sewing machine. Now, every night, Sibby and Magda cut cloth to the measurements of the girls, and soon they have functional dresses made of blue and red cotton. Ava dances in her new clothes, delighted. Livy thinks she is turning back into the little girl she was before the camps, despite the haunted expression in her eyes. Another couple of weeks pass in the happy company of the soldiers, after which Sibby decides it's time to move on. They are stronger now, and they have new clothes and food. They pack bread, cheese and salami into the capacious pockets of their new dresses and head to the farmer's house to say goodbye.
"The Allies have taken over Brandenburg,"
he informs them, scrawling out directions on a scrap of paper. He hands it to Sibby.
"That's where you should go."
The sun is shining on the girls as they head away from the house, waving a warm goodbye to the Russian soldiers. As the afternoon grows hotter and then cooler, Sibby is on the lookout for a place to sleep. They find a barn. The next night they sleep in a cowshed. Sibby is grateful to the locals who donate food as they march on. As they near Brandenburg, the group is joined by hundreds of others heading in the same direction, towards safety. "We are all survivors," Sibby tells her sisters. "We have all been beaten, starved and tortured. But look at us. We're still moving. Still alive." Brandenburg City has been reduced to rubble, and the girls navigate the destruction as they make for the huge army base set up to assist and repatriate the dispossessed. It is here the sisters say goodbye to the six girls who joined them on their freedom march. The Polish girls will stay together as they try to find their way back to Krakow, and Eliana and Aria are now firm friends, so no one is on their own. Ava, of course, will remain with the sisters. It isn't a tearful farewell in the end. Together, these girls regained their humanity, and that can only be celebrated. Sibby gazes up at the blonde soldier talking to her in English, a language she has no knowledge of, but she understands he is there to help her. Around her, broken girls fall to their knees, kissing the hands of American soldiers. "Where are you from?" another soldier asks her in German, and Sibby reels off the details of their identity and their escape from the camps. "But you're not from Auschwitz," he says. "That's not your home. Where did you live before?"
"Slovakia," whispers Magda, because Sibby has lost her voice.
"Hungary,"
calls another voice.
"Poland. Yugoslavia."
The sisters find themselves in a queue of girls, lining up to give their details to the white-shirted clerk sitting at desks in the middle of the chaos of the base.
"Are we safe? Is the war over?" Sibby asks.
The clerk looks up, a warm smile on his face. "You are safe. And yes, the war is over. The Nazis have been defeated."
"Are you sure?" Magda asks.
"I am." The clerk's grin grows wider as he says, "Hitler is dead."
"Dead?" whispers Livy. "Actually dead?"
The girls stare at the clerk, desperate to believe him. He's still smiling.
"What do we do now?" asks Sibby finally. "Where do we go?"
"We'll feed you," a clerk tells Sibby, "and give you and your sisters a place to sleep." They are allocated a place to sleep inside a concrete block. Livy starts to tremble as she enters the room lined with bunks.
"Livy, it's okay, my love. We're free now. This is just a room," soothes Sibby.
"And those are just beds," adds Magda. In between meals, they walk around the base, looking for familiar faces from Auschwitz, but find none. Sibby is restless, keen to be on the move again. For the first time in many weeks, she is not in control of their daily routine.
"We won't be here much longer," Magda says,
as they patrol the lines of tents, still hoping to catch sight of a friend. "Tomorrow we'll find out when we're going home." The next morning, a female Russian officer appears in the block. She sits at a desk at the front of the room and beckons forth the girls for questioning. Sibby is tired of answering these questions. She can't help fearing that one of her responses might elicit some sort of punishment. She reels off the details again.
"We're from Slovakia. We escaped from Auschwitz. My family is dead."
3 weeks, Livy explodes. "We have to stay here, in this camp, for another 3 weeks.
Despite her temper, Livy is looking well. Her cheeks are filled out, and the khaki trousers and white shirt they were issued on their arrival suit her, but her eyes still blaze with the same defiant fire. An officer has just informed them that in 3 weeks they will be taken by bus to Prague.
"The time will fly by," says Sibby, trying to sound hopeful.
"It always does."
"But I've had enough, Sibby."
"We've all had enough,"
says Magda, an edge to her voice that she cannot hide.
"What good does moaning do? Where did complaining ever get us?"
"Our house will be there when we get back, whether it's in 3 weeks or a month or a year," Sibby adds.
"But Mama won't be there."
The defiance is gone from Livy's tone. She heads for their bunk, climbs up, and pulls a blanket over her head. Magda takes a step towards her, but Sibby catches her sleeve.
"Leave her, Magda. She needs to feel her pain.
We can't pretend that Mama will be there. The weeks do fly by. Sibby was right. And now the girls will be boarding a bus in 3 days' time. Their names are once again checked off a list. When the clerk has confirmed their identities, he looks at Ava, whose name is not on his list. "And who are you?" he asks.
"Her name is Ava. She's with us," Livy pipes up.
"Where are you from, Ava?"
"She's from Yugoslavia, but she is with us," Livy says firmly.
"I'm sorry, Ava. You have to come with me. You will go back to Belgrade."
"But she can't," says Magda. "Her family is dead."
"You don't know that, miss. There may be someone in Belgrade who will take her in. A cousin, perhaps, an aunt. Our instructions are clear. Only citizens of Czechoslovakia are to return to Prague."
"When will she leave?" Sibby asks.
"You'll need to say goodbye now. I will take her to the Belgrade block."
He nods up and down, urging the farewell to begin. Ava starts to cry, and Livy throws her arms around the little girl. Sibby and Magda join the hug, and the girls hang on to one another for a long time.
"I'm sorry, girls, but I need to take Ava now. Please, let her go."
Slowly the sisters release the child in their midst. The clerk takes Ava by the hand and walks away. Ava doesn't resist, but she turns round, holding out an arm as if to catch hold of their hands.
"How many more people can they take away from us?" sobs Livy.
"They will never take us away from one another again," Magda says fervently. In silence, the girls return to their block and wait for the final 3 days to pass. It is a warm, late summer morning when the sisters join one of the 5 buses heading for Czechoslovakia. Livy gazes out of the window without speaking, lost in her thoughts of home and what awaits them. When the absence of her mother becomes too awful to contemplate, her mind darts back to Auschwitz, to Birkenau. "Is that it?" she thinks. "They went through all that horror, and now they're just being sent home, on a bus, as if nothing had happened." Rage spikes her body. Who is going to say sorry? Who is going to atone for their suffering? The senseless deaths! But 6 hours is a long time to keep hate alive in your heart, and on the 3rd go-around, Livy joins her sisters and the rest of the bus in a loud rendition of the national anthem of Czechoslovakia and a recital of prayers. Livy notices that while Sibby sings the songs, she clamps her mouth shut for the prayer. The sisters stare at the countryside as it sweeps past. The chatter around them falls silent as they move through the ruins of Berlin and Dresden. They watch men, women and children picking through the rubble. They all look up as the buses sweep by, holding out their hands for food. "These are the people who enslaved, starved, tortured and murdered us," thinks Sibby bitterly. "And now they dare to beg for our compassion." The mood on the bus becomes more alert as they cross the Charles Bridge into Prague. Some of the passengers are home. The bridge is lined with hundreds of people, waving hands, flags and flowers, welcoming them. As they drive onto the bridge, Sibby thinks of the hypocrisy of these citizens. They had once thought nothing of turning their backs on the Jews of their city, willingly handing them over to Hitler. She turns to Magda, her eyes flashing. "I never thought I'd see this," she breathes. "They abandoned us, and now they're welcoming us home." The convoy of 5 buses has to pull over after they have crossed the bridge, as the crowds are impassable. Then the doors are opening, and the exuberant hordes are boarding the buses. The sisters are offered cake, chocolate, water, fruit. A man presses money into Magda's hands. Livy starts to cry, overcome by the genuine outpouring of affection, by the cheering and clapping that engulfs them. An elderly gentleman takes Sibby's hand
and raises it to his lips. Just moments ago she was angry, furious that their welcome was nothing short of hypocrisy, an act displaying not joy at their return, but guilt for doing nothing to save them. She is not so sure now, as she struggles to make sense of what is happening around them. The bus driver takes the wheel, blasting his horn again and again to clear a path through the masses gathered outside. Soon, the convoy arrives in Wenceslas Square, where the mayor is waiting to welcome the return of Czechoslovakian citizens. The sisters step off the bus, hand in hand, wary of becoming separated amongst the roaring crowds.
"Promiňte! Promiňte!"
they shout. "We're sorry!" The mayor joins in the chant before calling for quiet. He tells them he is so happy they have returned home, that from now on they will be cared for, that what happened to them will never happen again. Loaded with flowers, chocolate and cake, the sisters join the other passengers and reboard their bus. Exhausted, exhilarated, they are taken to nearby army barracks where they will spend the night in bunks they don't have to share. They sleep well. Their journey home only really starts when they take the train to Bratislava the next day. Stepping onto the platform, each of the girls is struck with fierce, painful memories. On the tracks is a normal enough-looking train, at least it's not made up of coal or cattle wagons, but it's a symbol of their captivity all the same.
"Sibby," says Livy, her face crumbling, "I don't think I can."
Sibby is already weeping, and Magda is shaking.
"We can," sobs Sibby. "We've come too far, kitten, and this is the way home. Do you remember?"
The sisters hold on to each other as they cross the platform, hold on tight as they climb the steps, whisper words of strength and courage as they walk down the aisle and find a seat. Three sit on a seat made for two. They cannot be apart. Not now. They have been given new clothes at the army barracks, as well as a little money, and Sibby notes how they don't look much different to everyone else on board, save for the sunken eyes, hollow cheeks, and gaunt frames identifying them as the victims of a terrible war. The ticket collector hangs his head as he approaches. He won't take their money. "Promiňte," he whispers, and shuffles away. Their arrival in Bratislava is a far cry from the welcome in Prague. Other returning survivors slink away from the train station, still fearful of lurking enemies. Sibby asks at the office when the next train to Vranov nad Topľou will be leaving. "Not for 2 days," she is told with a sneer. "Can we stay here in the station until then?" she asks. The clerk shrugs his shoulders and turns away. For the next couple of days, the sisters sleep on the benches, use the toilets, and wait patiently for their train to arrive. Other trains pour into the station, from all corners of Europe, returning Slovakian survivors to their homes. Livy becomes transfixed by the appearance of these survivors. "Do we look like them?" she asks her sisters, over and over. Sibby and Magda wonder the same thing. These were happy, healthy young people who have been ravaged by inhumane torture and degradation. How did it happen? Who let it happen? Everything that made them human had been wiped out. They were skeletal figures now, hunched over by the burden of their experience. When it's time to pay for their tickets, Sibby approaches the window, half expecting her money to be refused. But the man holds out his hand, a glint of steel in his eyes, and takes it. They are finally on their way. The sisters step onto the platform where it all started. The sun is shining, at least. Sibby holds Livy's hand, and Magda slides her arm through Sibby's. They begin to walk, each of the sisters trying hard not to think about what awaits them at the end of this final leg of their journey. They walk slowly, taking their time to immerse themselves in the familiar streets. At the corner of their road, they stare up at the Catholic church, whose bells have sung to them the whole of their lives. They peer through the iron gates to the priest's house next door and marvel at the linden tree in full bloom. No neighbour steps out of their house to greet them, but Sibby notices the curtains pulled aside at their approach and then hastily drawn as they pass. They stand outside their home looking for signs of life.
"We don't have the key," Livy says. "Do we break in?"
"I think we knock," says Magda. "Mama was pretty sure someone would move in."
"Into our house?"
Livy is indignant.
"Who?"
"Whoever got there first," Magda replies. Sibby takes the initiative and strides up to the front door and knocks loudly. They can hear movement inside, footsteps, and then the door is flung open by a man in a stained string vest and grey underpants.
"What do you want?"
he asks gruffly.
"We want our house back," says Sibby, evenly.
"And who the hell are you? This is my house. Now get out of here before I throw you onto the street."
"This is our home," yells Livy, taking a step towards him. "It's you who doesn't belong here."
"Bloody Jews," he curses.
He doesn't move, and the sisters lock eyes with him until Magda nudges Livy aside.
"I'm coming in," she says. "There is something of mine in there, and I'm going to fetch it."
The man shoves Magda away and tries to shut the door, but the sight of this ugly figure attempting to close their own door in their faces flicks a switch in Sibby's head. She kicks him hard in one leg, and then she kicks him in the other. Livy manoeuvres behind him and shoves him onto the path. Magda sidesteps the man and runs through the door into the living room, where she finds herself face to face with a woman and two small children. They stare at her, and she stares at them. No one says a word. The children cling to their mother's skirts. Magda can hear Sibby and Livy screaming at the man outside. Grabbing a chair from the kitchen, she takes it into the hallway and places it beneath the trapdoor. She's through the door in seconds, wriggling to the far end of the cavity. She grabs the pillowcase, feeling the edges of the candlesticks and the smooth, flat surface of the photos inside. They're safe. Their memories are safe. The woman has pulled her chair away, and Magda crashes to the floor on her exit. But she's on her feet in seconds, running for the front door, just as the unkempt man is coming back inside. She pushes past him and is on the street again, waving the pillowcase triumphantly in the air. "I got it! I got it!" she yells, and the three of them run down the road. They do not stop running until they are two streets away. Only then does Magda realize she is limping. She has twisted her ankle in her fall.
"Are you all right?" Sibby asks.
"Yes, I just hurt my ankle when I fell out of the ceiling," Magda says.
"You fell... what?"
says Livy.
"Never mind," Magda smiles. "I have what I wanted."
"But what do we do now?"
Livy persists.
"Someone is in our house."
"Well, we can't stay here. I think we should go back to Bratislava. At least we'll be amongst all the other survivors," Magda suggests.
"Well, whatever you've got in that pillowcase, Magda, it had better be a miracle, because that's what we need right now."
Sibby is grinning, trying to infuse in her sisters the courage she is yet to feel herself.